This is Digital Story Podcast number 588, June 13th, 2017. Today's theme is Tiny Gardens for Big Pictures. I'm Derek Story. Regardless if you live in a cozy apartment with just a narrow balcony or you have your own house with a spacious back patio, you can create a photo wonderland with container gardening. Not only do you enjoy the benefits of nurturing your botanical friends, but they will reward you with stunning images. I'll plant those seeds on today's show. So I think it's true for most of us listening, and those of us also recording here, that if we could, we would travel more to exotic places to photograph flora and fauna. I mean, it's one of the joys of photography, isn't it? Exploring new places with camera in hand. And for a week or two each year, we do get to do a bit of that if we choose to. But what about the other 50 weeks? Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that we can do those other 50 weeks, instead of just out wandering the streets aimlessly looking for something interesting to happen, is cultivate our own botanical paradise. And we can do that through container gardening. And, you know, I'll tell you, what's really neat about this is that once you start it, you really get hooked on it. I set one up here at the studio. And those of you that haven't been here for a workshop, I'll tell you what I have here. So back when the housing market dipped a bit, I bought a townhouse. I bought a townhouse because I was tired of dealing with landlords and escalating rent. So I thought, okay, I will control my own destiny and I'll have my own place. It was a great decision. It was a great decision. And since the housing market has recovered, so it's actually become a decent investment also. So this townhouse is terrific. And as I've described before, I have a recording room where I am right now. I have a photography room. I have a classroom, all that kind of stuff. Has a full kitchen. And one of the things that I have in the kitchen is a window box. And window boxes are terrific. I always wanted a window box. Never got one until I bought the studio. And so one year I decided, hey, I'm going to put this window box to use. And I planted some impatiens and some other flowers there and cultivated them. And it's so easy with a window box because it's right there at the sink, at the kitchen sink. So you're making your coffee in the morning and, you know, you deadhead a few little flowers and maybe water the plants and so forth. You're all right there. It's great. It's fantastic. Plus, it has a really nice diffused lighting and the plants did very well in there. And so they became also my photographic subjects. And I go, wow, this is really fun. So even though it was a small space, I really got a lot of pictures. And I'll share one of those shots with the show. Well, I also have a back patio. And the back patio gets more sun. It's on the warmer side of the studio. And so I could grow different things back there. And again, in containers. And the nice thing about container gardening is that you can change your mind. You're not making a commitment. It is more like dating instead of marriage when it comes to the world of plants. And so I could have a plant in a container, another plant in a different container. One plant doesn't do so well, then I can replace it with another plant that maybe likes a little bit more sun or whatever's going on there. The other thing that I like about container gardening for photography is that you can move the containers around. Really nice. It's hard to do with plants in the ground, I tell you. So, for example, if I wanted to get a really nice shot of a particular plant, and I'm going to give you 10 of my favorite container plants here in just a minute, but if I want to get a shot of a particular plant, then I literally can just pick up the container and put it where I want. So I can have the backdrop where I want, I can have the lighting where I want, and I have room to stand. And, you know, one of the things that I like to do with container plants when it comes to photography is I like to break out the old macro lens because I really don't feel like I get to shoot with that lens enough. So I break out the macro lens. I can put the container where I want. I can set the tripod up if I want. You know, really start to get some control over depth of field here. Maybe bring out my ring light that I hardly ever get to play with. And just do this all right there in my shorts, you know, my cutoffs, right? Not my boxer shorts. In my shorts with a t-shirt and a hat. And then when I'm done, I literally walk 5 feet back in the back door of the studio, have a cold drink, and go back to work. Container gardening is a blast. Now, I think like so many other things that we don't know a lot about, you think, well, container gardening is great, but, you know, what do I put in the containers when I go to the nursery or wherever you go to buy plants? What do I ask for? What will work? Well, I thought I'd give you a list here of some ideas. And this list is in the show notes, so you don't have to write it down. You don't have to memorize it or anything. It's there in the show notes so that you can take a look at it. And you can just copy the names that I have in the list and Google them and look at all sorts of different shots of these plants and find some that you like. And what I suggest is that if you have a balcony or a little back patio or a window box or whatever, get started with two or three different plants. Kind of get going. I mean, don't bury yourself in plants right out of the gate there. Get yourself going with a couple of them. Enjoy shooting them. And then as you're shooting and as you're nurturing the plants and everything, then go, well, you know, what else would I like to shoot? I have all reds and purples right now. Should I bring in some yellows, you know, get some different colors going? Should I bring in some herbs or, you know, something that's edible into the mix here? And really start to have fun with it. Now, the thing that we know about macro photography is that suddenly if you get close to something, if you get really close to something, then it changes. Then magically, it becomes more interesting. So flowers and plants are interesting to begin with. I mean, probably they are the most photographed subjects in the world. I'm sure people are right in there. So it's either people or flowers. It's probably neck and neck. And I have no data on this. I just look at a lot of pictures. But flowers are up there, regardless of where you stand on this particular topic. And the thing about them is, though, that you have flowers where you step back and you're working with group shots, shall we say, of flowers. And then you do some portraits, and then you can really zoom in. This is something that people really don't like you to do, which is, you know, get like right in their face with a lens and take a super close-up. But flowers don't mind at all. They absolutely don't mind at all. Or if they do, I just don't understand their particular language. So there's so much that you can do with these container plants. And then, as I mentioned earlier, there truly is a joy in raising plants, in nurturing plants, in taking something that's either a seed or a seedling, and then suddenly it begins to flourish, and then it flowers, and then it gets bigger, and you're going, oh, that's because of me. It's a good feeling. I have to tell you that the plant side of the equation is just as satisfying as the photography side. This is a win-win situation. All right, well, let me give you some of the flowers and plants that I like for container gardening, and I'll try to remember to mention, you know, what kind of light they work well and stuff here. But we'll start with pansies and violas. I love pansies. They're great. There are so many different colors. They do multicolor blooms. They're, you know, if they're in a spot that they like, they do very well. And generally speaking, with pansies, you're thinking partial sun. So you're not going to stick them right out in the broiling hot sun of the day. They like partial sun, and they can do very well. And you get a lot of return. You get a lot of bloom return on your investment with pansies. Another plant that I like is the dwarf hydrangea. Now, hydrangeas are terrific plants, but you know, they can be very big bushes. And again, as I was talking about before, you know, a hydrangea is where it is, and you know, you either take pictures of it there or you don't get pictures at all. But there are dwarf hydrangeas also that you can cultivate in containers. And by the way, whether you're working with a hydrangea, a pansy, or any of the plants that we talk about, make sure that you look up what kind of soil that it likes so that you buy the right potting soil. And make sure you pay attention to how often they like to be watered. I mean, I think watering is probably the biggest mistake that people new to gardening make, and they'll either overwater or they'll forget about the plants and not water them enough at all. So you want to look those two things up. And interestingly enough, if you have the right soil for a plant, in other words, with a lot of drainage or maybe not as much drainage, acidic or whatever it happens to want, then if you get the right soil, you actually have a little bit more latitude in terms of the watering, because they're already in the right soil. So if you overwater just a bit, you can probably get away with it. Whereas if they're not in the right soil, then you're already kind of, you know, running uphill there. So that's one thing that I would suggest, that as you start thinking about what plants you want to have in your container garden, learn what type of soils they want. A lot of times it'll be right there on the tag, or you can just ask someone, or obviously we can stand there at the plant shop or at the nursery and just look it up on Google, right? I mean, this is a wonderful time we live in for discovering that sort of stuff. Anyway, the cool thing about hydrangeas is that they usually start blooming, you know, white or whitish pink, but then depending on the type of soil that you have for them, they can turn to shades of pink and purple and lime green, or a combination of those different colors. The flowers are interesting, and especially when you zoom in on them, they're just really neat plants. I don't think a lot of people realize that you can grow dwarf hydrangeas in containers and enjoy all this stuff that we like about them on your back patio or on your balcony. Generally speaking, I'm thinking that they like mostly shade for hydrangeas. So again, this is not a blazing sun kind of plant. Number three, by the way, I have 10 of these, not five. We have 10. So this is a double dose this week. Number three, a summer snapdragon. And summer snapdragons are, again, really good container plants. And they're good if you have more direct sun wherever you are. And so they can take more sun than, let's say, the hydrangeas or the pansies. And they will bloom all summer long. They'll just, if you get them happy, they'll just keep blooming and blooming and blooming. You can get them in pinks and mauves and deep purple and purple blues, white, on and on and on. Fascinating plants, pretty hardy, and they like the sun. Nice to have in the mix. Now, a plant that I have done in my window box is begonias. And begonias are terrific as long as you don't overwater them. I have killed begonias also. And I think what happens, or at least what happened to me when I watered them too much, I think they got like a root rot or something. They just, you know, the whole bottom half just got all kind of yucky and gross. So you have to be very careful not to overwater begonias and to keep them in the soil that they like. But if you do that, oh, they can be so pretty. And there are so many different types of begonias, again. And so you have a lot of options. They like partial sun. They're not for being out in the blazing heat all day. These are plants that if you get them happy, I can photograph begonias all day. I really can. I just think they're fascinating flowers. They're very photogenic, and you get in tight or semi-tight on them, and really some beautiful stuff. And in fact, before I even go to the next plant, you know, one of the projects that can come out of doing this container gardening is creating fine art cards. Flowers make great fine art cards. And for instance, so let's say that you work with these plants for a few months. So you're photographing them for a few months. You have a nice catalog of flower and plant shots. And then you go, I want to make a set of six fine art cards. These are cards that you can sell or you can use for practically any occasion, because people love flower shots so much. So you have these beautiful flower shots on these fine art cards, and then you write anything you want on the inside. Terrific project that can come out of your raising plants and photographing them. All right, next one. I think this is number five, double impatience or impatience. And by the way, they're I-M-P-A-T-I-E-N-S, impatience. Open flowers all season long. You don't need to deadhead them. And if you don't know what that means, it sounds kind of dreadful, actually, doesn't it? It means that once the flower has passed and is beginning to wilt, if you're deadheading, you have to pinch those off. And some plants, you need to deadhead or pull off the dead flowers before they'll throw new blooms. And patients aren't like that. They don't need deadheading. They just kind of keep going and going and going. So they like part or full shade. So again, they're not a plant that wants to be out in the sun all day. They like a little bit of partial sun, but you know, they want to be kept shady for the most part. They really like reflected light so that the light's coming in is diffused, but it's not too harsh on them. And again, blooms are in a variety of colors. White, red, pink, and purple are the ones that you see most often. And I love, on impatiens, I love having white in the mix. So let's say that you really are attracted to the pink and purple ones. Definitely get those, but then get a white or two to mix in there, because the white mixed in with the purple and the pinks look really good. And another note on color. So super vibrant red flowers are very hard for digital cameras to photograph. You know, the red actually will sometimes turn into a blob. So I tend to stay away from red flowers and work more with pinks and purples on the color scale, or, you know, go completely the other way with yellows and oranges. But the red ones can be very difficult to photograph. I tend to stay away from those. All right, next one. These are fun to photograph also. This is a daisy, and in particular, a Swan River daisy. And this is a spreading plant. It's an annual, but the flower, you know, daisies have this really clean look, and they just like open up and say, here I am. Here I am. Yeah, I got these wonderful white petals. I got these beautiful orange center, and just, you know, enjoy me. I love that. But they can be white or pink or purplish, the Swan River daisy. And I think all daisies are interesting. I've had, African daisies, I believe, that were pretty hardy, actually. And I think daisies in general are pretty hardy. And so if you don't have a lot of confidence starting out your container garden, daisies might be a good way to go. They seem to do pretty well with a lot of sun. Maybe not all day, but let's say that a big dose of morning sun or a big dose of afternoon sun, daisies seem to do pretty well with that. They're a great plant, and probably your biggest challenge with daisies will be keeping them contained within your container, because they'll love to spread. They want to get out and mingle and not be relegated to that container. So, but you know, plants don't mind being trimmed at all. Not a problem. How about chrysanthemums? Oh, that's so hard for me to say. There's an interdental thing there that's difficult. And in particular, there's the florist variety. And these are pretty good plants. And they have, I think, very interesting flowers. They tend to like moisture-holding planting mix. You might want to keep that in mind. And they will continue to grow, and you might want to start them out in a smaller container, but if they flourish, if they like where you have them, you'll probably have to repot them into larger containers, because the one thing about chrysanthemums is that they don't like being root-bound. They don't dig it at all, so you want to kind of keep them moving up, and then maybe at some point give them to a friend, or you know, just plant them in the yard if you have one. And you want to pinch them regularly. You want to stake them as needed. They like daily water in warm weather, maybe every other day in cool conditions. So, and they like liquid fertilizer. They do. So maybe once a week, every 10 days, until the buds start to show some color. They're cool plants, though. They're really lovely to work with. And again, great flower shots. I have a couple here that are a little bit off the beaten track. Flowering kale, and cabbage too for that fact, but kale in particular, very interesting leaf structure, interesting flowers, just a whole different look. And again, they're open and available to photography, and they can look really good in containers, easy to grow for the most part, and you get to eat them. So if you like kale or cabbage, you know, having that part of it is pretty nice. And instead of worrying about having to move them up in containers and stuff, you go, no, we're just having that for dinner tonight. But flowering kale, take a look at that. That's K-A-L-E, flowering kale. It's a good one also to put in containers and to photograph. And again, a whole different look. Johnny Jump Ups. These are cheery little flowers, I have to tell you. They do great in pots, Johnny Jump Ups do. They're what I call smilers. They make you smile. They make me smile. Nice little plant. And like I said, pretty easy to grow. Usually will be rewarded with a whole bunch of flowers to work with. And then finally, my last one on this list of plants that I like in containers are chives. Chives are great. First of all, they have these otherworldly flowers. That's the only way I can describe it. To me, they look like little alien flowers. I mean, they're really pretty. And when you zoom in on them, they look really terrific. But they're unique. And that's one of the reasons why I like them. I also like chives because they're very hardy. They're great herbs. They're easy to grow. They do great in containers. You can move them out of containers and put them into the garden and they'll go, okay, no problem. We'll grow here now. They're a lot of fun. And if you don't eat chives already, chop them up. You chop up the greens there, and they're great in dips and on baked potatoes and all that kind of stuff. They do like some sun, a bit of sunlight throughout the day. So you don't have to hide them in the shade. In fact, they will do much better if they have some sun. The plants themselves make great gifts. So not only, and maybe you could even do a whole package thing where you have, the greeting cards and the plant together. I mean, I'd like it if someone gave me something like that. So anyway, just something else for you to think about. Get your macro lens on your camera, get that ring light on, move in and out, maybe create some nice print projects. Your own botanical garden, your own container garden, just ticks off so many boxes of fun and pleasure. I hope you give it a try. I want to talk a little bit about this review that I read on the Phlebographer. The Lomography Lomo Instant Automat Glass Magellan Camera. That's a long name. And what is it? Well, it's an instant print camera, and probably one of the coolest instant print camera out there. Let me just read you a bit about what they said on the Phlebographer. The Lomography Lomo Instant Automat Glass Magellan answers the prayers and wishes of almost every Fujifilm Instax mini film user, and it's arguably one of the best cameras shooting the format on the market. Obviously, part of the appeal is the glass lens on the front of the camera. This lens is the same optic used on the company's Lomography LCA-120, and so it is the sharpest and fastest aperture lens available for use on any Instax camera at the time of publishing this review. The quality will appeal to a lot of photographers, and though there are a number of shooters who will still want manual controls, you'll be shocked at how great the photos are from the Lomography Lomo Instant Automat Glass Magellan Camera. And it's available on the site. I have the link in the show notes, but it's available at the Lomography site for $189. And if you've been interested in instant photography, but haven't really liked some of the Fuji models and so forth, I mean, they're designed for different segments of the population. Some are kind of fun and plasticky and colorful and bubbly and all that. Whereas probably a lot of us that are listening to the show want something, a bit more serious with a glass lens and good image quality. Just because we're shooting instant film doesn't mean, we want crappy shots, right? We want good shots and we want instant film. And I think that's where this camera comes in. Now, the Phlebographer, Chris is into analog photography, he's into instant photography, film photography, all that good stuff. And I really trust his judgment on this. I haven't shot with this particular camera. I only learned about it because he's writing about it. But then when I went over to the Lomography site and I looked at it and I looked at the camera and looked how it's constructed, the size, nice and compact, it looks like a real camera. And I was thinking, boy, if I was shooting instant right now, or I wanted to shoot instant, this would probably be the camera that I look at. So that's why I bring it up to you. If you're thinking about that, or if you're interested in instant photography, take a look at this camera. Like I said, I have the link in the show notes. Go check it out. Make some pretty pictures, not just, you know, blurry ones. Digging deeper with Image Framer 4. So last week, I reintroduced you to Image Framer itself. It's been a while since we talked about, and I introduced you to Image Framer 4, which is the latest version. It just came out last month. And I want to dig a little deeper this week, and then we're going to really get into especially the use with Photos and Lightroom. But there are more features than I talked about last week. In fact, there are a lot of features. So I want to get to some of those features that I wasn't able to talk about last week, just to give you a view of the depth of this application. I mean, it has a lot going on. So first off, I want to talk about themed frames. And these are frames that they have for holidays, seasonal, kids, romance, you know, all these different creative designs. And, you know, they're really good for greeting cards and scrapbooking and things like that. But in particular, if you're a freelancer, and especially if you're doing weddings and events for freelance, so weddings, anniversaries, all those sort of things, then these frames are real crowd pleasers, I tell you. So you take one of your favorite couple's shots from the wedding or an engagement shot, and you create a themed frame in Image Framer, and suddenly this shot just, I mean, it goes to a different place. And then the nice thing about it is that, you know, with the overlays, which is the next point that I wanted to make about these, you can have text or image overlays on the image or built into the overall design. And there you can add, you know, copyright, signatures, descriptions, automatic data, like, you know, the XF data, stuff like that. And you can draw from IPTC data. Even though you start out with a theme, with a preset, a pre-designed frame, you can make all the adjustments that you want to it. That's just a starting point, or if you're happy with it, you just go that way. And then being able to customize it with overlays. I mean, this is really powerful. So if you're in the freelance business, and if you're doing jobs such as these events, this is one of the ways that you can separate yourself from other photographers. So the themed frames combined with the overlays, very powerful tool, and especially for event photographers. Speaking of the templates, there are all sorts of preset templates, but you know, you can add your own templates. So you can design your own templates in Image Framer. It's very easy to do. And then there's mats. And I think mats are very interesting in Image Framer. They literally look like mats that you would purchase and use when framing an image. They have texture, they have beveled edges, all that kind of stuff. And you have control over the bevel width. You have control over the colors of both the mat and the bevel. And the size of the mat can be different in each direction. I mean, you have all this control. Again, you literally can design your own mat or mats in layers with this application. And then the thing is, they look good. If you've ever had to hand cut a mat, then you would love this application. That's all I have to say right there. The way that I have used the mats is I just have them all part of the image. So I create the mat, I put the image in there, I make it all work together. Because the graphics are, you know, so beautiful and high resolution, you put it in a frame, it looks good. It looks really good. And now I have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. So all you have to do is click on the Image Framer 4 tile. The upgrade is free for Image Framer 3 customers. So that's kind of cool. And then if you don't have ImageFramer 3 and you want to get this, then just click on that tile. It'll take you over to our landing page. And if you go to our landing page, you get a 20% discount on any of the versions of ImageFramer just by going to the landing page. You don't have to enter a code or anything like that. This is another creative way for you to present your images to other people. And I tell you, they make outstanding fine art cards. And again, there's an ImageFramer tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. Just click on it and take a look and see what they have to say. All right, just a couple updates here. Big thanks to all of our Patreon members. I have a nice surprise for you. I just submitted my ebook today for publication. So it's coming along nicely. I finished it, and now I'm in the business part of the deal. But one of the benefits that our Patreon members are going to get is that anyone who is a Patreon supporter is going to get my next ebook on creative printing. And this is a cool, cool ebook. I think you're really going to like it. All the Patreon members are going to get it for free. So just as a way for me to thank you for being part of the inner circle. And I should be able to talk about this more next week. I think all the business stuff will be straightened out by then. And essentially, I'm just going to have a code for you, and you can go and download it and read it on any of your devices. So thanks to Patreon members, and I'm going to keep coming up with special goodies for you. But the next goodie you're going to get is an ebook. If you're interested in supporting the site through Patreon, we do have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. And our Patreon members are helping us keep the lights on and the servers running. And we love that. Okay. And finally, a big thanks to the folks over at Red River Paper, who were the force behind me being able to create this ebook on creative printing. They underwrote it for me and helped supply me with all the materials that I needed so that I could actually get this thing produced and get it out there. We're going to give it away at the Out of Chicago conference in my talks on printing. It's going to go to our Patreon members, and then it's going to go online for sale. So big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting the site, but also for supporting the projects that we both think that are great projects that we want to produce for you. And having a sponsor that works with me that way, I just can't describe how helpful it is in terms of keeping new things coming off the line there. They have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story, and they have a rocking Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. That's going to do it for me this week. Make sure you come back and join me. Until then, have a great week, and think about setting up your own container garden. You'll be glad you did. Until next Tuesday, bye-bye now.